romantic. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have been spending this summer so far learning about Rashi. And what I'd like to focus on with you tonight is Rashi's commentary on Shas. Now, we spent 2 weeks talking about Rashi's commentary on Chumash. Rashi on Gemara, in some ways, is a much less original work than Rashi's commentary on Chumash. By less original, I mean that there were people who explained Gemara before Rashi. There is no one who wrote a commentary on Chumash before Rashi. Now, when I say no one, that means no one from the world of Ashkenaz, because that's the world that we're talking about. But Reb Sadia is a little bit before Rashi. But at the same time, Rashi's commentary on Shas is not really original, because before Rashi, we had commentaries on Shas written by the Rosh Yeshiva in Mainz. There's a commentary on Shas that's printed in Mesechtos and Kodshim primarily, but it existed everywhere, which is called the Perush of Rabbeinu Gershom Ma'ar Hagola. Right? So there's commentaries on Shas before Rashi. But you know what? They're not nearly as good as Rashi. And ain't nobody in their right mind, pardon my language, who would want to learn Gemara with the commentary of Rabbeinu Gershom. Or the commentary, you're just not going to do it. So what we'll focus on tonight, briefly, is what makes Rashi on Gemara so special. What is Rashi's unique contribution to the learning of Gemara, so much so that I would contend that for us, Gemara and Rashi are connected. You can't learn Gemara without Rashi. It just can't be done, no? It's almost impossible. So what we'll focus on tonight briefly is what makes Rashi's commentary so special. If it's quick, because we're late. Yes. Yeah.
Is his style, the same style that he used to explain Chumash?
So Rashi's style explaining Chumash is very different than Rashi's style explaining Gemara. Okay, Rashi in explaining Chumash is giving us Midrashim. Rashi in his explanation of Chumash is there to give us, again, in the halachic part, it's halachic Midrashim, in the agada parts of Chumash, in the story part of Chumash, it's what we normally call Midrashim. Rashi's job in Chumash is to give us Midrashim. Rashi in Shas has a different job. His job is to make the Gemara readable. Without Rashi, Gemara is not readable. Now, let's just talk about this briefly. The other commentaries on Shas that existed before Rashi, and to some extent the commentaries on the Gemara that came after Rashi, are very different. You see, if I take out the comments of Rabbeinu Chananel in Shabbos this year, we had some comments of Rabbeinu Chananel that we focused on. Rabbeinu Chananel is before Rashi. Rabbeinu Chananel is a Gaon. What Rabbeinu Chananel does when he comments on the Gemara is two things. He gives a brief overview. The Gemara says this. And then Rabbeinu Chananel says, and we paskin like this. There's a machlokes over here. V'kaimalon we paskin. Rabbeinu Chananel's job in commenting on the Gemara, and all of the commentaries before Rashi were like this, they're basically there to take a student who can't learn Gemara and tell the student, okay, this is what you gotta know. Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, we paskin like Rav. Right? This is what you gotta know. Bare bones. No? That is what the commentaries of the Gaonim did. Rashi does not do that. Rashi's job is to teach me how to read a piece of Gemara. That is Rashi's job in life. Without Rashi, you can't read the Gemara. And let me explain to you how I know this. Because there are certain mesechtos in Shas where the Rashis that we have ain't Rashi. No? Rabbi Rosenzweig likes to comment, many times these are reputable Rishonim, they're printed on the page, but certain mesechtos in Shas, Nedarim, It's well known that the Rashi in the Dorim is not Rashi. When I was in high school, they told us not to learn Rashi in the Dorim because Rashi in the Dorim is written by Rashi's daughters. That, of course, made us all want to learn Rashi in the Dorim. But Rashi in the Dorim didn't really make it. There's no evidence it's written by Rashi's daughters, but it doesn't really do the trick. You're stuck on a piece of Gemara, you can't read it, you take Rashi in the Dorim, and you still can't read it. You're stuck. Me'ilah. Okay, Me'ilah is a very difficult Masechta. You open a Me'ilah and you have no idea which end is up. Because the Rashi or the commentary that's printed isn't really Rashi and the Gemara doesn't flow. Talmud Yerushalmi, okay? We call it the Jerusalem Talmud. Scholars like to call it the Palestinian Talmud. I'm not saying anything about any biases or whatever. But Talmud Yerushalmi is a very hard work, no? You know why Yerushalmi is so hard?
There's no Rashi.
There's no Rashi. Rashi teaches us that you can read a piece of Gemara. Without Rashi, the Gemara is a complete riddle. It's a mystery. I don't know where to start. I don't know where to finish. I don't know what flows into what. Rashi adds little words. He says, B'temiyah, this is a question. B'nichusa, this is a proof. No? Sometimes Vahatanya is a B'temiyah, it's a question. Sometimes B'nichusa. Rashi, that one little word, solves all the problems. Because I'm reading the Gemara and I don't have the flow. That one flow, Rashi adds. He'll add like these little transitional words. Right? It's very brief, very laconic. But what Rashi does is he makes the Gemara readable. That is the Chiddush of Rashi. Now again, when we talk about learning Rashi in broad terms like this, obviously the best way to understand it is to do it. And maybe we'll try to learn a few Rashis together as we go on. But first I just want to make a few broad comments about how Rashi works.
Can you say the same thing about Tosfot?
Okay.
Tosfos
is like this. Very important point. What I'm quoting now is from Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik. It's written, Dr. Soloveitchik writes exactly the same thing, like five or six different places. And YU, a number of years ago, put out a book on printing of the Talmud. And in that book, Dr. Soloveitchik has a very nice essay about the commentaries on the page and the Talmud. Okay, let's go like this. Can you learn Gemara without Tosfos? Absolutely. No? Can you learn Gemara without Rashi? Impossible. Now, I know this for a few reasons. First of all, I've tried. Second of all, every single printed edition of the Gemara forever has had Rashi. Every single one. The first printed edition of the Gemara was printed in the year Gemara. Wow, what the heck? Right? Gemara, by the way, is 244. No? 244, right? Do the gematria of Gemara. It's 244. The way you figure out what year it is you add 1240 plus the year. So the first Gemara was printed in 244. Plus 1240, that is going to be 1484, Sansino printed a Gemara. Gemara with Rashi. The Sansino Gemara with Rashi, 1484. First one. Now, every single Gemara has had Rashi. We have had Gemaras that were printed without Tosfos. The Maharal of Prague famously felt that none of us learn properly, and we shouldn't print Tosfos on the page. And there were Gemaras in that same YU book. They pointed out that a fellow Heller wrote an article that based on the Maharal's educational program, they printed Gemara with Rush on the page, not with Tosfos. But there has never been a Gemara without Rashi, because Gemara without Rashi can't go. You need Rashi. Is this clear?
Yes.
Now, does Rashi tell us what the halacha is, ever?
No.
No. Right? That's very different than the earlier commentaries. The Rabbeinu Chananel, the Perushim of Megensa, right, of Rabbeinu Gershom, they always tell you how you paskin. Very rarely does Rashi tell you how you paskin. You know when Rashi tells you how you paskin?
When?
Oh, that's my question. So Rashi tells you how to paskin when Rashi himself was involved in a fight with his generation about a particular issue, and Rashi says, oh, and we paskin this way, and that is when Rashi tells you how to paskin. Very rarely does Rashi tell me how to paskin. For example, let me give you a Rashi here in Beitza, on Daf Chaf Daled Amid Beis, okay, the bottom of page one of these beautiful source sheets. So the Gemara in Beitza speaks about that there's a prohibition, b'chdei sheyasu, if a goy brings some food for a Jew, so you can't do, you can't get any benefit from that food. Goy brings a few on Yontiv, you can't get benefit until Matzai Yontiv, the amount of time that the action could have been done. So I can't eat it right after Yontiv.
Okay.
Right? You need b'chdei sheyasu.
That would be the same for Shabbos, right?
For Shabbos, same thing. And Rashi comments, the reason is, k'dei shalo yehena mimleches Yontiv. Right? If I have a 2-day yontiv and the guy brings some food for me, so what I can do is I can eat the food after Kadesh Yasu, even though I'm eating it on the 2nd day yontiv. It's still permitted. Why? Right? How do you translate it? Any way you look at it, it's permitted. If the nighttime is a weeknight, you're ready to wait a Kadesh Yasu. And if it's Yontiv, so it turns out that the food was picked during the week, and it's mutter. Kein daiti nota. This is what my opinion is. V'yeshli rayos harbe. And I have many proofs. And he quotes a Gemara in Erevin, and a Gemara in Beitza, Daf, Dalid, etc. And therefore, it is for sure mutter. V'lo zachisi lishos pi Reb Yaakov b'davar zeh. Right, Rashi now gives a little history. I think it's permitted. I didn't have a chance to ask my Rebbe. Ki hayu noagim bo heter bimkomo, bimkomenu, v'hayali davar pashut. Ula achab tiraso sharebi shamati es rabbeinu Yitzchak Halevi shu ose ad leo motzei yontiv sheni, v'chol anshe iro komoso. This is a fascinating Rashi. Rashi had 2 different Rebbeim. He first learned in the yeshiva of Worms. Then he first learned in the yeshiva of Mines. Then he went to yeshiva of Worms. So Rashi says, I didn't ask my teacher Reb Yaakov, my first teacher, what he held, because obviously it was permitted. Everyone permitted this case. Later on, after my teacher died, I heard that Reb Yitzchak Halevi, who's his 2nd teacher in Worms, I heard that he said it's forbidden, Motzei Yontiv Sheni, and in his town they did that way, and the Bahalachos Gedolos also did it that way. Vidanti Lafunav, and I argued with him, V'holo Ho'el Li Hadavar, and I was unsuccessful. V'chol Taimo Eino Ela Midanachem B'chdei Sheyasu B'layla Re'uya La'asiyo Ka'amar. His proof is that the Gemara's expression is K'dei Sheyasu, the amount of time to make it, to do it. That means it has to be at a time when you could do it, which cannot be 2nd night of Yontiv, when you can't pick the food. V'ani Omer, Sara Sheyadu Dei Sheyasu, Shema Yom HaYakodesh Alay Locho, V'teda, etc. Fine. U'b'tshuvas Abinu Gershomar Hagom, Atzasi Kamosi, Gamata Ba'alai Michtav Migermayis, Shebala Shom Adam Gadol Zokim V'yoshe B'yeshiva Min Roma, Ushmo Reb Kleinimis, U'baki B'cho Talmud, V'horek Kein V'nechlak Aleihen. Zokt Rashi, a whole story over here, no? I said it's permitted. I didn't ask Reb Yaakov. Reb Yitzchak said it's forbidden. I have many different proofs. Later on, I heard that there's a tshuva Rabbeinu Gershom that says it's permitted on the 2nd day Yontiv, like I say. And this great person came from Rome, and he also said it's permitted. So therefore, I'm right. Now, Rashi over here is paskening a halacha. The Gemara just says K'dei Sheyasu. An ordinary Rashi would say, K'dei Sheyasu means the amount of time it takes to get the food, end of conversation. Over here, because there was a whole fight going on in Rashi's lifetime with the other Chachamim, Rashi decides to give you a halachic treatise. I said this, I had this proof, that proof. This is highly unusual in Rashi. I'm bringing this up because it's so unusual. Rashi only tells me what the halacha is when there's a fight. In Avodah Zarah, we learned Avodah Zarah for like 7 years in the show, no? In Avodah Zarah, Rashi many times, many, probably 10 times, tells us what the halacha is. For example, there's a discussion, how many seals you need on the barrels of wine when you send it from city to city. Rashi says that there's a contradiction in Gemara's within Avodah Zarah, and I pass in one seal is enough. Right? Rashi rarely does that. But you have to realize that this was a fight that was eating up the Jewish people. So only in those cases does Rashi tell me what the halacha is. Right? Because in some ways, Rashi's getting so excited, I can't hold it back. I have to say my piece. But usually, what Rashi is doing is he's teaching us how to learn Gemara. And if I want to teach you how to learn Gemara, what I do is I give you Gemara with all of these transitional words, and that tells me just how to read the Gemara. That's Rashi's goal in life. Now, unbelievable. Rashi on Chumash, in some ways, is a work that other people could theoretically write. Not easily. Rashi on Gemara is just, because the brilliance to take a text and make it usable. Now, by the way, this completely democratized Gemara learning. Until Rashi came along, if I want to learn Gemara, I have to travel to a city where there is a Talmud Chacham who can teach me Gemara. And not every Talmud Chacham could teach every Masechta. Different people have different expertise, and they would travel to learn, right? So I go to Shnipishuk to learn Huriel, so whatever it is. Now that there's Rashi, everyone can learn Gemara.
Like the art school of his day.
Yes. Now, that's a very important point. Rashi is art scroll, not Sansino. Now, what does that mean? The Sansino Gemaras are literal trans. Did any of you ever use a Sansino Gemara years ago, right? They are are they usable?
Not really.
They are literal translations of the words. I can tell you where the Sansino was usable for me. In ninth grade, we were learning Gittin, and they have all these dapim of Gemara about like the various diseases that can be cured by various and sundry things. So I had no idea what any of the words meant. Take out Sansino, I know what the words mean. Sansino is good for that and that alone, to teach you what the words mean.
But if you...
Because it's a literal translation, and it teaches you what the words mean. Art scroll doesn't teach you what the words mean. Art scroll gives you the flow of Gemara. Rashi gives you the flow, right? Now, Rashi tells me what words mean all the time. And Rashi does so beautifully. But Rashi is not just a dictionary, right? If anything, Rashi is much more than just explaining what the words mean. Because Rashi often, unlike, you look at the first daf in Beitza, okay, the Gemara has a line about Uchla de Ifras, that there's some food that broke apart. So Rashi quotes Uchla de Ifras, and he quotes Vichaveiro, and the similar term is a pasuk over here, and the Gemara later on, and the Gemara in Chulin. Right? That's what Rashi says. The other Svarim who translate, they just tell you what the word means. But Rashi is there to help you remember things, right? To teach you how to learn. Rashi, when we spoke about how Rashi is the Rebbe of the Jewish people, this is what it means. Rashi made Gemara accessible. Until Rashi, you couldn't learn Gemara, and that's why those Masechtas that don't really have Rashi are so difficult. Okay, Daf Yomi just finished Baba Basra, right? Now, Baba Basra is an interesting Masechta because I have a test case. The first 29 Daf of Baba Basra, I have Rashi. And then, in Baba Basra, here, Bambasa Chav Tesam and Aleph, Dear Masa Alama Amar Reb Nachman, right? Bambasa 29, Dear Masa Alama Reb Nachman. So the Gemara says, Ad kam perish Rashi Zatzal, Mikan ve'elach perish Rabbeinu Shmua Reb Meir. Rashi's until here, from here on it's the Rashbam, right? That's what it has in Baba Basra. And on the side of the Gemara, they write in small letters, Bidifus Pizarro Hanusach Kan Mace Rashi. And the Pizarro edition says, Rashi died over here. As a kid, I always imagined that, like, it's so unfortunate. Rashi's like, really, he realizes Baba Basra is going to be difficult, and he just, like, he just passes out in the middle, right? Obviously, that. Now, the Kan Meis Rashi, we don't know exactly what it means. We'll talk about this in 1 minute. But we have a test case in Baba Basra. Because I have the first couple of blot in Baba Basra, first 29 Dapim, with Rashi. And then afterwards I have the Rashbam. And the Rashbam is a very fine commentator. But the reason, one of the reasons why Baba Basra is such a long and difficult Masechta is because the Rashbam keeps on writing and writing and writing. You have one Rashbam that goes on for 40 lines, no? Rashi, three words. Rashi could say chick chack boom. The Rashbam keeps it. The way Rav Shechter always used to say is that my first year in YU, we learned Baba Basra. Shechter says, you know, Baba Basra, the Rashbam keeps on talking and talking and talking, and then he puts his foot in his mouth, and everyone talks about that. Just skip the difficult parts. You go on. Right? Rashi makes the Gemara smooth. The Rashbam can't do that. Now,
a similar situation in
Arab Sochem? So Arab Sochem is interesting. It doesn't say that Rashi died. Right. The Gemaras that we have printed in Sochem have both Rashi and Rashbam printed on the page.
Right.
In all likelihood, the Rashi might not be a real Rashi, but I don't have, throughout Sochem, I don't really have the comparison. Right. I don't really have the comparison. In Baba Basra, you have a comparison. Now, let's talk just very briefly about Rashi dying. Okay? So Rashi dies by Basu Chavtes. If you look in Makos on Daf Yudtes, in the middle of the Gemara, the next like source sheet that I give you. So Rashi over there begins Hochi Garsinon, right? Let's just talk about this for a second. One of Rashi's major goals in life is to make Gemara usable. In order to do that, Rashi establishes a correct text of the Gemara. So Rashi says, Hachi Garsinon. This is the correct text. Now, why is that important? This is very important, first of all, because it makes Gemara usable. I can't read a text that's all farblonjit, it's all messed up. But more important than that, I don't know, more important, but Rashi is living in a world, we mentioned, of what they call the 11th and 12th century mini-Renaissance. The 11th and 12th century mini-Renaissance is a movement in the church where people are beginning to study text. And the first stage in studying text, instead of just listening to what they tell you, the first stage in studying a text is you need a correct text. And at this stage, in the 11th and 12th century mini-Renaissance, not the real Renaissance, it's later.
When you say people, do you mean the clergy? The
well,
it's a joke. It used to be the Catholics
don't really trust. So Catholics are don't really trust the common person all that much. But it began to open up a little bit more. You have more people who are studying text now, and they are beginning to do it somewhat. That's what the... Now, Rashi, in this world, is saying, oh, you know what? If I want to study a text, I need a correct text to study. Hachi Garsinon. This is the text. The correct girsa is this. Why do I say this is the correct text? Because you can't study it if it's all messed up. Again, go back to Me'ilah. Go back to those Masechtas where you don't have a Rashi. The reason you can't study it is you don't know which end is up. Temura is so difficult because there are two different texts throughout the Masechta that are, right? Such a hard thing to figure out. Rashi says this is the correct text. So, fine, that's the first point of Rashi. Now, a corollary of this that Yisrael Toshma points out is as follows. We pointed out actually last week in the Gemara Shir on Shabbos afternoon that Tosfos HaRosh in Daf Tes in Horios has an issue with the Girsa. Tosfos HaRosh says that the correct Girsa in the Gemara is this, Ki chein nimtza b'sifrei Sfarad. This is found in the Spanish Sfarim. So we pointed out a little bit of a history that the Rosh himself moved from Germany to Spain, and they felt that the Spanish Girsaos are more correct than the German ones. You know why that is, Toshma argues? That's because of people like Rashi and his ilk. You see, throughout the period of Rishonim in Ashkenaz, there is a big machlaikis. Are you allowed to change Girsaos in a text? I remember when I was in high school, ninth grade, so I was learning a Gemara and it didn't make any sense to me. So I took out my pen and I crossed it out. And my chavrusa started to scream. Like, who do you think? You can't do that, right? You can't just take out your pen and cross out a Gemara that you don't like. Right? We don't work like that, right? We don't work like that. Well, that we is because we have traditions and there are charamim placed by Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, that if you change the text in the Gemara, you should have your hand chopped off, bad stuff like that, right? There are some charamim that they tried to attribute to Rabbeinu Gershom, it didn't work. At the time of Rashi, in Ashkenaz, and I'm talking about Ashkenaz writ large, Ashkenaz and Tsarfaz, Germany, France, people are changing texts in Gemaras when they didn't fit. So therefore, the books of Sfarad are more reliable than the books of Ashkenaz, because in Sfarad they didn't change the text. Now part of this has to do with how you write a commentary, right? In Sfarad, the commentaries that they're writing are synopses. The Gemara says this, we paskin like this, here's a question, answer, etc. No? Rashi is writing a running commentary. When I write a running commentary, then if I have a problematic line... By the way, Rashi only changed the text. Rashi himself wrote his book as a kuntres, no? Tosfos often calls Rashi Perush HaKuntres. Kuntres means a pamphlet. Rashi was not written on the page of the Gemara itself. It's a side book. Later on, when they printed it together. Great. The only Masechta where Rashi made corrections on the text itself is Zvachim. Rashi was convinced that Zvachim has like such a bad girsa that he's making changes on the text itself. But part of this issue of text study also is coming from an ability that if I don't like the text, I'm going to change it. No? So that's all part of this Rashi world. Good. So now, let's go on. We're learning a Rashi and Makis. Rashi and Makis also says that Rabbeinu Gufal Tahar Yatsa Nishmasa B'Tahara, our rabbi had a pure body, his neshama left the impurity, Lo Pirish Yoser Mikan Ve'elech Lashon Talmido Rabbeinu Yehuda Bar Nosson. Right? It says, I'm just after, right, Rashi and Makis, there's like a little break, then this is Rabbeinu Gufal Tahar. It says, from here on is the commentary of Rashi's grandson, the Rivan. Now, here's the problem. Rashi is dying twice. Most of us only die once. Now, the teretz is that how else did Rashi write so much?
Because he had... Multitasking.
Right? So it's multitasking. They say that Reb Chaim Eiser used to write two letters with two hands, a right-handed letter and a left-handed letter. Right? Maybe that's what's going on. It's unlikely. It's unlikely. Now, also, why would Rashi be writing a commentary on Makis if he didn't finish Baba Basra? You'd think that first you finish Baba Basra, then you write Makis. And how could he die twice? So the answer probably is to both of these questions that there is a school of thought that Rashi wrote his commentary multiple times. Now you're going to say, why on earth would anyone do this? So I'll tell you why. One of the big Talmidei Chachamim today in America, Reb Fivel Cohen, now he's in Lakewood, he writes Svarim on Yoredeya, called Badei HaShulchan. Right. He writes each of his Svarim three times, I believe. He writes it, closes it up, writes it again. Why does he do that? To make sure his ideas are the same. According to one tradition, the Chida has, look at the first source on the sheet. Chida, the Shem HaGadolim, says, Rashi asa shlosha maduros b'talmud. Rashi made three editions of his commentary on Shas. Umadura shlishis hizubi adenu. V'dikdik ma'obel shono, shramas kama chidushim b'shinui os. Right, he says that Rashi wrote his commentary three different times. This has become an established thing in the world of scholarship. If any of you want to get a doctorate in Rashi studies, the only place to really do this is in Bar Ilan. And in Bar Ilan, if you want to get a doctorate in Rashi studies, what you'll do is you'll take a Masechta on Shas and you'll compare the manuscripts, all the different manuscripts of the Rashi, to each other and to the printed Rashis, and you'll try to notice similarities and differences, and that's how you get a doctorate. It's tedious, it's boring. Sometimes you end up with stuff. And the sheet of the Mahadu wrote, what it's called, Professor Lifshitz. Elozer Lifshitz has a sheet of the Mahadu wrote. He's very into it. Others are into it. The sheet of the Mahadu wrote says that Rashi wrote his commentary many different times. But there are different versions of the sheet of Mahadu wrote. One version of the sheet of the Mahadu wrote says that version one of Rashi was Rashi as a little boy when he's a student. You see, if I'm a student in yeshiva, I have notebooks, no? Right? We used to write by hand. Then this thing called the laptop was invented, and we all like play solitaire all day instead. But we, at one point, we used to actually take notes, and you have notebooks. So it could be that version one of Rashi, they say, was Rashi writing his teacher's Perushim on the Gemara. Version two of Rashi is Rashi editing his notes. Didn't you ever do that as a kid? Like you spent a summer editing your notes on the Masechta, right? Okay. Some people do that. Right? So, that's version two. Then version three of Rashi is that Rashi wrote his own commentary. That's Lifshitz's approach. Apdowitzer, Avigdor Apdowitzer, wrote the notes on the Rav Yah. He was a great scholar in his own right. So afterwards, his approach to Rashi is a little different. Afterwards, his approach is that Rashi was Lahavdo, like Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Lahavdo. Rav Aaron didn't write his Shigurim. We have over here a few vases of the Shigurim of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. He didn't write them. His students wrote them. So says Apdowitzer, right? When we say that there are different versions of Rashi, what that means is that Shmerel and Beryl and Yankel are all sitting there, and they're taking notes. And by the way, some students are better than others, no? Sometimes you have a student who gets 100 on every test. Sometimes you have a student who doesn't know that tests can make it to double digits, right? There are different types of students out there. So the Mahadu wrote are not all equal according to Apdowitzer. That's his approach. Now, this approach of the Mahadu wrote can be used to explain how come Rashi is dying many times. You see, they had different versions of Rashi out there. There are different manuscripts. By the way, there are more manuscripts of Rashi on Gemara than there are of Rashi on Chumash. That's interesting. Awesome. And there are so many manuscripts of Rashi on Gemara. And what happened was, at some point, the copyists say, you know what, this manuscript, maybe it ended, it died out in the middle, something. They couldn't find the rest of it. So what they did is they took other commentaries, in Bava Basra, Rashbam, in Makkos, or Rivan, they take other commentaries. But what Rashi really wrote on everything, we lost some of them. Now, to say that we lost Rashi's is a little bit difficult, because Rashi spread like wildfire. Rashi's commentary on Shas took over every other commentary. You can't find a parish of... By the way, there's one Rishon who has a commentary on Shas the same time as Rashi, Rabbeinu Eliyakim. We have it only on Yoma. Right? There's like... There are no real workable commentaries. Maybe we'll talk about that in a few minutes. We have no workable commentaries on... Right? The Rabbeinu Gershom isn't like a line-by-line commentary. We have Rabbeinu Gershom's commentary on Shas. On those Masechtas, we don't have real Rashi. Yeah?
So it sounds like you're explaining the fact that you Rashi dies twice, that we just lost the manuscript that you
yes.
Why do we need this concept of him writing it twice or three times? He wrote it once, and we lost it.
It could be also. So we need this concept of him writing it multiple times because it resolves contradictions in Rashi. Sometimes I have a stira in Rashi. The teretz is, it's not a contradiction. That, right? Why not? Because this is version A, this is version... Now, in some mesechtas, the Bali HaTosfos speak about Rashi Madura Kama and Rashi Madura Basra, in Ksubis. The Bali HaTosfos speak in those terms. Now, does that really mean that it's a new edition, that Rashi rewrote it, or not? So, Lifshitz and the Chidah seem to assume that Rashi wrote his commentary three times. In this book, by Grossman, he contends that Rashi did not write his commentary multiple times, but what Rashi did is he edited his commentary. And we have Lashonis of Tosfos, by the way. In Shabbos, you have this in like three different places. That Tosfos quotes a Rashi, and then Tosfos has a Lashon, a few questions on Rashi, and he says, therefore, it seems to me the pshat is like this. And Rashi himself explains like what I think the pshat is later on. And Tosfos here in Shabbos Kuftes Vav it is, Tosfos has a discussion about what Shtori Hedyotos means. There's a prohibition to read Shtori Hedyotos on Shabbos. Okay, very nice. So Rashi says that means you can't read letters on Shabbos. Tosfos asks Akasha, why can't I read a letter on Shabbos? By the way, you have to think like a medieval Jew. You get a letter to your house on Shabbos, that might mean, Dear Schwartz, King is out to kill you. Run. That's the letter. So Tosfos asks Akasha, why shouldn't I read the letter on Shabbos? It's potential pekuach nefesh. Right? That's Tosfos' question. So therefore Tosfos says, oh, you know what? It seems to me that Shtari Hedyotos are like Shtari Chovos. I shouldn't read my ledger. Who owes me money and stuff like that? So that's what I shouldn't read on Shabbos. And that's the real pshat. And that's what Rashi says later on, etc. V'chein higia b'feirish ksav yodo. And that's the way Rashi changed it with his own handwriting. Remember, the Bali HaTosfos are Rashi's grandsons. And they're saying the Zayda, the grandfather, changed what he wrote. So Grossman contends Rashi never wrote a completely new commentary. But what Rashi did is he changed the text. A little correction here, a little correction there. Yeah, over here I said like this, I changed my mind. Right? It's not really a new commentary. It's not really a new commentary. That is, now, a few things about Rashi. Rashi, because he established a correct text in the Gemara with the Hachi Garsinons, and because Rashi made Gemara readable, that's why Rashi made it possible for us to learn the way we learn today, which is basically the way Bali HaTosfos learn. Let me explain. Dr. Soloveitchik, Dr. Grach, as we call him, has in his book about Yayin Bimei HaBeinayim, about wine in the Middle Ages, it's like page 130 or so, that Whitehead said that all Western philosophy are notes on Plato.
What?
Whitehead said that all of Western philosophy is a series of notes on Plato. That's what it is. And one could argue that all of Talmud Torah are simply notes on Tosfos. Whenever someone writes a tshuva, what they're really doing is they're saying, we have this Tosfos. What does Tosfos do? Okay? Tosfos does a method called dialectic. Dialectic means, this is Dr. Soloveitchik's words, that you collate, you bring together all of the parallel texts. I have a sugya about Kohanim, or the Shluchei Didon or Shluchei Derachmona. That sugya appears in Yuma Daf Yotes. Well, it also appears in the Nedarim. It also appears in Kedushin. I collate all the texts. Then I actively look for contradictions. Then I resolve the contradictions by method of distinction. That's what the Bali HaTosfos do. That's called dialect, right? That is Bali HaTosfos. That's how they learn. Beautiful. Now, Tosfos can only operate once you have a Rashi. And that's why Tosfos has their name. Their name is Tosfos. Tosfos means additions to what? To Rashi. All of learning that we have are pretty much notes on Tosfos in the sense of Tosfos takes the Gemara, looks actively for contradictions between this one and other Gemaras, and tries to resolve it, and then the Ramban resolves it in a different way, and then the Rambam has a totally different approach, because as we know, the Rambam causes all the problems in Judaism, and then when I write a tshuva, right, my tshuva begins by saying, well, what do I do over here? I have five different approaches in Rishonim. How do I solve this issue? Right? My tshuvas are going to be notes on Tosfos. It's like what Whitehead said about Plato, Lahavdil. But the point is, Tosfos can only be possible once you had a Rashi before him. Rashi is extremely local. Rashi only focuses on this Gemara. By the way, that's another way to resolve Yonah Frankel and his dissertation on Rashi, points out that maybe the answer to the contradictions in Rashi is not really contradictions in Rashi, it's that Rashi's explaining Brachas and Rashi's explaining Kedushin. And in Brachas, the Gemara fits better. This way, Kedushin fits better that way. Right? Contradictions in Rashi are because Rashi is very focused on the local thing. But the point is that Rashi made Tosfos possible. Now, the question as to whether there are different Madurot of Rashi or not, so in Bar Ilan, a few different dissertations have come out. There's a dissertation by a fellow named Malachi. Malachi looked at Rashi and Brachas. Brachas, by the way, is one of the biggest Masechtas. There are 3,105 Dibur HaMaskels of Rashi in Brachos. Of those 3,105 Dibur HaMaskels and 1,372 of them, there are significant differences. That leads in the direction that this is not just making stray corrections, that this is a new work. That leads in the direction of Madurot. However, when Arend did his work on Rashi and Bava Metzia, he noticed that you don't see these differences. And you don't see these differences in Rashi on other Masechtas. Of those Masechtas, it's only in Brachas that you see such a huge difference. What this means, I'm not sure. Whether they're Madurot or not, it could be it's just a semantic issue, how extensive the changes were. But the fact is that we do have many contradictions in Rashi. Rashi, because he's there to make Gemara readable. So we'll just make one or two more points. Rashi does not explain the most basic words in the Gemara, ever. Words like vitulaka, words like ibayalahu, right? The most basic Gemara words, Rashi does not explain. You know why not? Because he assumes that your Rebbe in 6th grade, by the way, teaching Gemara in 5th grade is a bad idea, your Rebbe in 6th grade explained to you what these words mean. Right? Rashi's job is to explain those slightly more obscure things and to make the Gemara flow. Rashi is the Rebbe for the Jewish people, but not at the most basic level. Unlike Rashi on Chumash, where the Lubavitcher Rebbe commented, Rashi on Chumash is written for the 5-year-old, for that first student who, right, is bothered by the most simple questions on Chumash. Rashi in Gemara is not. Why that is, again, assuming the Rebbe is correct, is worth focusing on. Why Rashi on Chumash has an intended audience of the biggest beginners, beginnership of beginners, but Rashi in Gemara doesn't have that as his intended audience, is something that's worth focusing on. I printed out on the second side of the sheet just the Gemara in Yuma. It will take us too long to go through the Gemara, but the reason why I give this Gemara is that this Gemara is completely unreadable without Rashi. This is, it's a simple piece of Gemara once you have Rashi. But if you try to read this piece of Gemara with Rashi, Daf Beis in Yuma, not such a hard thing. It don't read straight. The godless of Rashi is these little comments that he makes make the Gemara readable. Try it on your own. Try to read this Gemara on your own without looking at Rashi. By the way, and this explains why your Rebbe in elementary school, when he taught you, right, about learning Gemara, said you keep two fingers on the place, not just one. Right? Because two fingers is, I can't learn Gemara without Rashi. It is all the same. That is the beauty of Rashi. Thank you for listening, and you should have a good night.